For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Rebecca Foster. U.S. National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster has told reporters that President Donald Trump did not even know the source of the classified intelligence he shared with the Russians. His words came a few hours after President Trump appeared to confirm via Twitter he did indeed share intel with Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov and Russian Ambassador Sergei Kislyak during a meeting last week. This after the White House denied he had spread classified info. Speaking from the White House Tuesday, National Security Advisor McMaster said the president was not fully briefed on the information he shared and then quickly left the briefing room.
He shares information in a way that is wholly appropriate. And I should just make maybe the statement here that the president wasn't even aware, you know, of where this information came from. He wasn't briefed on the source and method of the information either. So I'm sorry, this is going to be the last question because we do have the president of Turkey coming, I think, momentarily. Thank you very much.
South Korea says North Korea is making faster than expected progress toward a successful intercontinental ballistic missile. On Sunday, the regime of Kim Jong-un tested a missile which landed just south of Vladivostok in the Sea of Japan. Our correspondent Priscilla Huff has the latest.
The threat is now, the former deputy CIA director told the CBS Morning News about North Korea's progress on the engineering of an intercontinental ballistic missile. And missile experts in the U.S. believe North Korea has taken a stepping stone by firing a rocket into the atmosphere, and then the trajectory ended up near the Korean Peninsula. This mimics what an ICBM can do without openly crossing an American tripwire, analysts tell the New York Times. And South Korea agrees, with the defense minister publicly saying that the recent test was successful in flight, and Seoul considers it an IRBM, intermediate-range ballistic missile of enhanced caliber.
A prominent Mexican journalist who covered drug trafficking and organized crime has been shot dead in the state of Sinaloa. Andrea Arenas has this report.
Javier Valdez, an internationally known reporter, was killed Monday afternoon in the city of Culiacán. According to Rio 12, a publication that Valdez co-founded back in 2003, masked men forced the acclaimed journalist from his car, shot him, and left his body in the middle of the street. Valdez was well recognized for his books on drug trade, as well as for his role in investigating drug cartels. Mexican prosecutors are looking into whether his killing comes as retaliation for his work or if it was a carjacking turned deadly.
From Euros Worldwide, this is FSN.
Thank you very much, Rebecca Foster. Well, it's cleared up in good old Manchester. Horrendous weather over the last day or so. A lot better. It's looking this evening. Welcome to the programme, Tuesday, May 16th, 2017. My name is Richie Allen. This is going to be an interesting programme. Tweet at Richie Allen Show. Email richie@richieallen.co.uk. Your opinions do really matter to me. They really do. Tuesday show then. Let's get on with it. Lots to tell you.
Broadcasting live from the great city of Manchester, England. This is the Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com. It's the Richie Allen Show, brought to you in association with davidicke.com. And now, live from Manchester, England, here is Richie Allen.
The biggest party donor scandal in UK history is not being covered by the UK media. We've talked about this with Nicholas Wilson on the programme, HSBC, IPGL, Tory donations, Saudi Arabia, and all the rest of it. Massive story. The journalist and the social justice campaigner, blogger, and much more, Joel Benjamin, joins the programme to talk about it. He's all over it. Nicholas Wilson comes back as well. You know all about Nicholas. Don't need to tell you too much more about Mr. Ethical. He's also standing for Parliament as a candidate in Hastings and Roy. That's this hour coming up real soon. Hugely important this. You really do not want to miss this. And in the second hour of the programme, Ilana Freeland joins us. She's not been on the programme for over a year. She's a journalist, author, a researcher specialising in weather modification, the global smart grid, what it means for us, DARPA, the technological wing of the Pentagon, and much more. Alana Freeland joins us in the second hour. As we approach 5 minutes past the hour, how are you? Hope you're well. Hope you're well. Slight change this week only, to the schedule. We're on Tuesday till Friday instead of Monday till Thursday. But we have a TV programme on Thursday. The new TV show starts on Thursday. So, in fact, there's a whole new schedule for summer and autumn, at least. And I'll tell you more about that a little bit later on. Mentioned about the tweets. Keep those tweets coming in. Lots of tweets already. And a lot of tweets talking about two huge stories. One which I'm not going to get into. And that is the death of the Moore's murderer, Ian Brady, which, despite the fact it's a huge story in Manchester, you know, that resonates hugely with the people of this great city. Brady was locked up in 1966, I believe, for the murder of five children that we know of, along with Myra Hindley. One of the most horrific murdering sprees, I think, in UK history. He'd been in a psychiatric institution for over 50 years. He died yesterday. Huge media coverage of that today. But also the UK Labour Party's manifesto, which was released today officially ahead of the election on June 8th. Now, it was leaked, wasn't it, last week? So much of what was said today was already known anyway. This happened at a university in Bradford today. Jeremy Corbyn outlined the party's main policy commitments. And if you didn't get any of that today, if you've been working, if you work for a living, you're not a layabout like some of us, and you didn't get it, here's a very quick summary of what Corbyn talked about today. Scrapping student tuition fees went down very well at the university. Nationalising England's nine water companies. Reintroducing the 50p rate of tax on the highest earners above £123,000. So you wouldn't start paying 50p in the pound until you were earning above £123,000. Income tax rate 45p on 80,000 and above. More free childcare. A guaranteed triple lock for pensioner incomes, ending zero hours contracts, thousands of new police officers and firefighters, levying to charge companies a levy on salaries above £330,000, delivering rail electrification in Wales and the South West as well, and much more besides as well, accepting the result of the Brexit referendum. And a short time after the launch, Jeremy Corbyn spoke with Faisal Islam, who is the political editor of Sky News. And here is a little bit of that conversation.
In this document, have you learned the lessons of why Labour lost in 2015? Because some will argue that, although it went down well in this hall, it's the swing voters that you're not hitting just yet.
All the policies we've announced have proved to be very popular over the last week or so, the ones that came out before the manifesto itself. And I think when people get to read or hear about what's in our manifesto, 95% of the population will pay no more in tax, VAT or national insurance, but instead we will get properly funded schools, a properly funded health service, a housing programme that does deal with homelessness, but above all, an economy that is investment-led and grows for the good of all. And we won't have these dreadful levels of inequality in Britain.
So Labour had an issue with economic perceptions of economic competence, but you're asking for even more trust from the public in terms of a government that has a much stronger hand in the state, in rail, in energy, in water. They need to trust you even more than they didn't trust the last Labour
party. I think the privatisation of rail, energy and water has resulted in what? Huge increases in water bills, huge increases in rail fares, and has resulted in the public being ripped off, whilst at the same time those companies are paying huge dividends out, paying some fines in the case of water for the pollution that they've caused. Isn't it better to have some public certainty about the vital services we need? We all need gas, we all need water, we all need electricity.
So you're going to cut the bills, you're going to cut the fares?
And we will benefit from the profits that are made as well, as a public.
So you will cut the bills,
well,
you will cut them.
What's the
the London aim, to Manchester, 50% discount?
I can't put figures on that, and I don't think you really expect me to. What I'm saying is that if we have water companies that are making huge profits, underinvesting in the infrastructure, in some cases being fined for the pollution they're causing in our rivers, I think we can do things differently and better. Water is publicly owned in Scotland, for example, already.
I wouldn't argue with any of that. The water, rail and energy companies are making astronomical profits, said Corbyn today, and he's right. If the people owned them, we could use that money to reinvest in the services, first of all, but also fund vital services like the NHS. No argument there. Now, Faisal Islam wanted to know more about benefit freezes. This is important because Corbyn has been accused by some newspapers today of basically doing a flip-flop or a U-turn on the promise he made at the Labour manifesto launch to axe the benefits. To axe the benefits freeze, I should say. Not to axe the benefits. To axe the benefits freeze brought in by the Conservative government. A lot of people pointing out before his speech today that there was no promise in the manifesto to reverse the benefits freeze, which caps benefits at the April 2016 level for the next 3 years, instead of rising with wages. Faisal Islam brought this up. This is important.
Can you clarify what is happening with benefits? You seem to suggest down there that the freeze would be lifted, but that is not costed in your manifesto.
The points I was making about benefits are the benefit cap has very perverse effects, as does universal credit, because the problem is that in areas of high housing costs, like central London, basically the central areas of most of our cities and some towns and cities like Oxford and Cambridge, that means that the benefit cap means that those who are in private rented sector can't afford to stay there and get moved out because the council doesn't have the resources to pay them a transition amount. And so what we're doing is looking at how we will deal with that. And the issue fundamentally is low wages and high housing costs.
But low wages in the manifesto. Well,
low wages are absolutely in the manifesto.
No, £10 living wage. Is it costed in the manifesto?
We have not made a clear commitment on that. The commitment I make is that I do understand the issue. I understand the perverse effects of the cap, which is what I made clear in the answer to my question there. And we will be dealing with that in the context of more affordable, secure housing and higher wages through a living wage.
Why have you prioritised students rather than people on frozen benefits?
We're prioritising not charging the next generation for going to university, but we're also helping people on benefits by, as I've said, more secure housing, by ending the indignity of the capability to work tests and making them a medical assessment, not a bureaucratic assessment.
Jeremy Corbyn today, I'm not immune to the fact that many people with disabilities and many people with chronic illness who do listen to this programme have been in touch with the programme through the Facebook page and through Twitter to say they're delighted to hear this, you know, medical assessment on the ability to work only, not a bureaucratic assessment made by outsourced companies working for the DWP. I'm not immune to that, I totally understand it. So the Conservative Party's response has been all day that Corbyn's sums don't add up. Their various spokesmen and women, cabinet MPs, saying it's all nonsense from Labour. Here's Theresa May's very brief response to the Labour manifesto.
If we look overall at that manifesto, I think it shows what we knew all along, which is basically it doesn't add up. And if you look across that manifesto, the question isn't what people are promising, but can you believe that people will deliver what they're promising? You can only fund our National Health Service, you can only have the funding that we've made available in relation to childcare if you've got that strong economy. What we see from Labour's proposals today, as I say, is that they don't add up, and their nonsensical economic policies would mean that actually it was ordinary working families who would pay the price of Labour's coalition of chaos.
About what you'd expect there from the Prime Minister Theresa May. Again, I want to just point out, look, I'm not immune to the feelings of people who are really, really, really struggling. You know, I mentioned Hayden Hewitt, the co-founder of LiveLeak.com, who understands, I think, that ultimately when you vote, you get two masks as a choice, which basically parties are two masks on the same face. But I understand people saying it's better in the short term for the very, very worst off, the poor and those with disabilities. My friend Aaron Callender said this as well, and these guys believe that ultimately voting is futile. But why put your head in the noose immediately is their take on it, I suppose. Why just, you know, go with the Tories and hang yourself? Why not get some relief by going with the Labour Party? But I want to point out again, and I'm not going to dwell on it, you know, that however much of a relief it is for the worst off to hear the Labour manifesto, and it's a godsend in the light of everything the Conservatives have done to the neediest. Long, long term, it matters not because of the borrowing. Okay, allegedly £30 billion would be borrowed by the Labour Party from the Bank of England, meaning the cycle of debt continues forevermore. But again, I hear those of you who are grabbing onto this and running with it. I disagree with you, but I respect your point of view, and I haven't walked in your shoes, so I don't judge you or anybody else. US President Donald Trump has defended his absolute right to share information with Russia. I think you heard that on the news, following a row over classified material. He tweeted he had shared facts pertaining to terrorism and airline safety and wanted Russia to do more against so-called Islamic State. Massive to-do about this in the US. The Washington Post saying Trump had confided top secret information relating to an IS plot thought to centre on the use of laptop computers on an aircraft. This afternoon, H.R. McMaster, as you heard at the top of the news, has said Trump has no idea where the intelligence comes from. That's an interesting one, is that. You'll know by now that the Syrian government has been accused of carrying out mass killings of thousands of prisoners by the US government, which said it had satellite images to prove it, and it did release satellite images, but that's all it released. The Trump administration claimed the bodies of those killed were burned in a large crematorium attached to the Saadnaya prison, which is outside the Syrian capital of Damascus. This allegation is a follow-up, I suppose, to the Amnesty International claims made back in February that 13,000 people, mostly civilians, have been hanged in secret at weekly executions at the prison. Now, it must be pointed out that today the Syrian government came out and said very strongly that the accusations were a new Hollywood story and totally baseless. And we would express concerns, I think, on this programme that these claims are a pretext again to an escalation of NATO's response to what's happening in Syria. But we're not going to get into that right now because we don't have the time. Keep your tweets coming in. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. richie@richieallen.co.uk. Must point out, of course, we are broadcasting live on Fab Radio 2 here in Manchester, Alternate Current Radio. We're on TuneIn Radio as well. Tens of thousands of people listen to this programme live on TuneIn Radio. And, of course, we broadcast live on davidicke.com. Multiple platforms. Coming up for 18 minutes past the hour. We're going to take a very, very brief break. Want to get some more time in with our guests in the first hour, Joel Benjamin and Mr. Ethical Nicholas Wilson.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Virtually every transaction that involves a child is valuable to somebody.
We intend to show everyone the real reason children are being removed at an alarming rate.
No, this is awful.
The baby's not being seen by the doctor or nothing.
They are psychopathic.
They have got the legal right to kill children now, because that's what they do.
Traffic 2, available now at premilonpictures.co.uk.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Broadcasting the information the mainstream media won't touch. This is The Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com.
Welcome back to the program. It's 16th of May, or May 16th, 2017. Let me briefly tell you about the new schedule, which I suppose, I mean, we'll carry it out this week, but it begins officially on Monday. So from next week, we'll have live radio show Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday at 7 p.m. till 9 p.m. as normal. We'll be live on television at BVTV Studios in Manchester on Thursday between 9 and 10. That's every Thursday from here on in, including this Thursday. And then on Friday, we'll have a live radio show between 1 and 2 p.m. Friday afternoon. And Sunday View, as always, will be live at 11 a.m. on Sunday morning. So that's the schedule. Been blogging about that on our Facebook page today, and we'll give you more information about it ongoing. As I said, we begin the television show this coming Thursday. That's this Thursday, 2 days from now. But the official schedule begins next Monday, and I'll tell you more about it ongoing. All right, going to take some music while we get our first guests on the program. You don't want to miss them. This story is absolutely huge, and the British press is not interested in it. It's been described as Britain's, the UK's most serious ever electoral fraud scandal. Nobody wants to know about it in the MSM. We're going to talk to Joel Benjamin and Nicholas Wilson in a couple of minutes on Your Richie Allen Show. Broadcasting live on DavidIke.com, Fab Radio 2, ACR, and TuneIn Radio as well. You're very welcome to the programme. Thanks for tuning in. Tuesday, May 16th. This is Brian Ferry, back with Joel and Nicholas after this. Brian Ferry on the Richie Allen Show. It's 24 minutes past the hour. After a horrendous old day, it's turning very nice. It's turning very nice now in Manchester. It's not looking too bad at all. Let's crack on with the programme. A lot of tweets already, huge amount of tweets, in fact, and massive interest in our first guests and this story. Now, we've been talking about it quite a lot in recent days. Last week, Nicholas Wilson, who's going to join us in a couple of minutes, was on the programme. The HSBC Conservative Party IPGL story back in 2008. A company called IPGL, which was being run by the former Conservative Party treasurer Michael Spencer, was given a £214 million loan by HSBC, that's IPGL. But at that time, that company was in severe financial difficulties. In fact, one of its companies, a betting firm, was reporting massive losses at the time. But despite all of that, the company IPGL was giving money to the Tory party. In fact, from 2007 till 2011. Now, I'm not going to tell you too much more about this because our next guests are far more qualified to do so. There's a lot more to the story. Lobbying by the Conservative Party, peerages being awarded. You know, it's hard not to editorialise when you hear this sort of stuff. This is a deadly, deadly serious story, and it is not being covered by the UK press. It is not. I'm joined by Joel Benjamin and Nicholas Wilson. Now, you know all about Nicholas from him coming on the programme. Joel's a journalist who has 10 years professional experience in town and transport planning, public policy and environmental consultancy roles, including 2 years research and advocacy experience with Move Your Money UK, studying public sector, local authority. And I've lost myself there, have I? Where are we? Yes. Public sector, local authority and alternative finance. Now, you can find Joel at communityreinvest.org.uk. He's an environmentalist and campaigner demanding we reboot the financial system. Go to communityreinvest.org.uk. I will tweet those links, communityreinvest.org.uk. You know all about Nicholas, of course. He blew the whistle on massive consumer fraud by HSBC. Thousands of store card customers had an illegal collection charge added to their balance. Massive, massive, massive scandal. When Nicholas was working at Waitman's, he blew the whistle on that. He had, you know, extreme difficulties getting anybody to pay attention to it. But after years and years and years and years, earlier this year, HSBC agreed that they would begin to pay reparations. Let's welcome to the programme Joel Benjamin and Nicholas Wilson. Joel and Nicholas, welcome.
Hi, Richard. Hi, Richie.
Welcome, Nicholas, back. And Joel, welcome to the programme. Joel, sorry for screwing up your introduction there. It's a Tuesday, but it's like a Monday for me. You've done a lot, and I've been reading your articles in The Independent and other publications, mate. I'm really glad to have you on the programme. Thanks for doing it.
Thank you.
This is massively serious. I'm not overselling this. Explain to our listeners, Joel, exactly what's gone on since the company IPGL took that loan from HSBC back in 2008. What's happened?
Sure. So to set the scene for your listeners, the story starts in October 2008 at the very height of the financial crisis. Now, IPGL, which is basically a company run for the benefit of the Tory Party Treasurer Michael Spencer, holding his personal investments, his shares in ICAP, for example, it got into some financial difficulty because one of its subsidiaries, City Index, was suffering losses on people who had taken spread bets during the financial crisis. So they went to HSBC Bank for a loan of £214 million. That loan was secured against shares in ICAP and a number of other companies owned or run by Michael Spencer, including City Index and Numis Corporation. So since that loan was extended by HSBC to IPGL Limited, there have been a large volume of donations flowing to the Conservative Party. These donations are not all in cash. Some of them have been in kind, including private jet flights to the World Economic Forum in Davos in 2009 and 2010 for both George Osborne and David Cameron, just before they became basically the government in mid-2010. So these donations were large, they were ongoing, and what we're saying is we question whether they would have been possible had HSBC granted such a generous loan at a time when these companies were in some difficulty. It's also worth pointing out to your listeners that as well as City Index being in trouble, is also in conversation, in consultation with the regulator, the Financial Services Authority, because there were questions asked about some of these shares which were being held as collateral and the company being over-leveraged. So basically what happened is a group of us went to the HSBC AGM on the 28th of April and asked a series of questions to the bank about its role in public life, in lobbying for deregulation and around political corruption. And basically the story has all flowed from there.
What did they say? First of all, I'm glad you answered my next question, which was the shares that were offered by IPGL as collateral against the loan. My next question obviously would be, were those shares any good? And you've answered that, Joel. There's, you know, there might be some evidence that the shares weren't good enough to be offered as collateral.
Yeah, I mean, to be clear, I mean, we're not suggesting for a moment the shares weren't good. What we are saying is the timing of which this loan was offered was literally the day in which the banks collapsed in Iceland.
Yeah.
So it was the basically the onset of the most serious phase of the 2008 financial crisis, right? Most of the banks had stopped lending by this point. It was just a week before the UK government extended a major bailout package for RBS, HBOS, et cetera, et cetera. So the financial system was particularly precarious. Now, obviously, at a time like this, valuations of shares fluctuate wildly. You know, people panic sell. They might, you know, fall 10, 20% in a day during a financial crisis. So basically, extending a loan of this size to a company which is known to be in some difficulty, secured only against shares, which are going to fluctuate in value over the financial crisis, raises a series of questions. Now,
and you asked them, sorry, Joel, you asked those questions. Before we carry on, I don't want to lose sight of what you said a second ago. You and your colleagues put these questions to HSBC. What did they say? We've not lost Joel, have we? Momentarily, I hope not.
Sorry, Richie, I've lost you for a moment.
Sorry, Joel. Yeah, I think the call dropped out briefly and came back. Sorry, mate. Yeah, the question was, when you put these questions to HSBC, you and your colleagues, what was their answer?
HSBC refused to answer the question. They said they would not answer questions on individual cases. They mentioned that, you know, they engage in a range of political lobbying activities. So one of the items on the agenda for the shareholders to approve was to approve the board to make political donations. Now, of course, HSBC claimed publicly to be politically neutral. And I don't know about you, but I'm not aware of a politically neutral party anywhere on the ballot box.
No.
I mean, if you look at the recipients of all these donations, it's overwhelmingly the Conservative Party and Conservative Party politicians. People like Tom Fairhead, Rona Fairhead's husband, who is at Kensington and Chelsea Council. People like Sajid Javid, who, you know, is a leading prominent Conservative financier. It's these types of people who are receiving donations from HSBC, and yet they claim publicly and at the AGM to be neutral, which is quite extraordinary.
Which is inexplicable. Now, Nicholas will come in a second, and I didn't mention in the introduction, because today is kind of like my Monday, forgive me, but Nicholas is standing as a candidate for Hastings and Rye, which is a seat held by Amber Rudd, the Home Secretary. Nicholas will come in a couple of seconds. Really important stuff. NicholasWilson.com is Nicholas's website. Joel, is there any evidence that Theresa May has personally benefited from this money loaned to IPGL and then given to the Conservative Party by Michael Spencer? Has she benefited personally?
Sure. Well, I mean, obviously, you know, we can't kind of track the flow of money from the loan into the Conservative Party coffers. It's not like you can say, you know, direct correlation from A to B. However, what we can say is based on parliamentary declarations in the parliamentary record, Theresa May did receive a cash donation from IPGL for the purpose of her 2016 leadership bid to become Prime Minister.
But it's Joel, can I just...
Go ahead, Nicholas.
Can I just jump in here? I mean, it's important also to note that IPGL banked with...
HSBC
at the time they made the loan. So HSBC were aware of the political donations. I mean, the company was in difficulty, but they were still making donations to the Tory party. I mean, If I was lending money to somebody, I wouldn't be too happy if they were giving it away.
I mean, that's a very important point there, Kameen, that one of the key issues we raised with the bank at the AGM was that when they're extending credit, a loan to a person like Michael Spencer, who, let's make this clear, in 2008, he was the Conservative Party treasurer. That means his principal job for the party was to raise as much money as humanly possible from his City of London contacts. He had boasted publicly he was going to blow the Labour Party out of the water with the amount of money he was going to raise. Okay, so this is the context, which hasn't been mentioned by BuzzFeed and the BBC and others who have attempted to cover this and failed. So Michael Spencer was there raising as much money as he possibly could. At the time, HSBC were IPGL's bankers. They would have been transactions and donations going through those accounts on a regular basis, going back to around 2003. They would have seen donations going into the Conservative Party and being basically marked in the accounts for the purposes of supporting David Cameron's leadership bid in 2005. And they should have, under Know Your Customer and anti-money laundering protocols, extended a series of questions to Michael Spencer and IPGL regarding A, the purpose of the loan, B, how it was going to be paid back, whether it was going to be in cash, whether they'd have to sell shares or paintings. And additionally, the other question they should have asked him, of course, is what were the purpose of these political donations and was that in line with HSBC's policy? Now, we put these questions to the bank and they refused to answer them.
And he was a politically exposed person.
Correct.
This is quite extraordinary. I want to point out again to our listeners that Labour MP John Mann, I said this is the biggest party donor scandal ever. I know Joel has been speaking with the SNP. They're horrified by it. We are going to come shortly to why, because I described this, and again, maybe again, it was maybe poor form on my behalf, but I described it as, you know, a massive open goal for the Labour Party last week. Took a bit of criticism for that, but I couldn't understand looking at the information that was given to me by Nicholas, the information that Joel has gathered and Joel's colleagues. I couldn't understand for the life of me why the Labour Party wouldn't be jumping right in there. Now, Joel and Nicholas together, come in and out as much as you want. Tell us about, you see, because the tentacles of this then spreading out then, because the whiff of corruption, we start looking at political favours. And Nicholas and I talked about, you know, lobbying by George Osborne, by David Cameron, for HSBC Bank after this and during this particular period in the United States and elsewhere in Saudi Arabia. And this is where it gets really, really interesting. And then we can talk, of course, about the lack of media interest in the story. So, Joel, the favours that seem to have flown from this for the bank.
Yes, I mean, so let's start with Lord Stephen Green, who was the, CEO and chairman of HSBC, going back to, 2008, 2009, 2010. He obviously came in for significant criticism over the whole Mexican money laundering fiasco. And can I just point out to listeners, just this morning there was a Mexican journalist shot dead in Sinaloa, which is basically ground zero of the Sinaloa drug cartel at the center of that drug-running money laundering scandal. So while all this was going on, David Cameron in 2010, as Nicholas has told you last week, appointed Lord Stephen Green into government as Trade Minister. In addition to this, there were parallel investigations going on into the so-called Swiss leaks, elites, politicians using secret Swiss accounts to avoid tax. We had, in the years following, the Panama Papers, which again...
I'm going to stop you there, Joel, because of the chronology. Also, at the time that Cameron made Green a Lord in November 2010, the HSBC fraud that I've been campaigning about was covered up by the Office of Fair Trading. There was a press release issued by the Office of Fair Trading telling HSBC or its subsidiary bank HFC not to keep adding these charges, which were illegal and which I complain about. But it wasn't in the press release. The press release was about charging orders, which is about something else entirely. And attached to the bottom of the press release was a PDF attachment, which was actually an order against HSBC to stop adding illegal charges. And that happened in November 2010 at exactly the same time that Cameron was making green a law. So it was covered up. And so it wouldn't embarrass his... Go on.
And just one other point for your listeners. Around the same time, George Osborne and David Gorky actually signed a non-prosecution agreement with Switzerland to basically state that they wouldn't pursue UK citizens who had secret bank accounts in Switzerland and look to prosecute them. Now, this was done on the pretext that they would try and repatriate as much of this wealth from Switzerland as possible. In effect, really got back less than 10% of the money George Osborne promised. So all this was basically a get-out-of-jail card for rich donors to the party. It didn't do what it was supposed to do. So, I mean, if you go back through this whole period, there have been a series of political events where George Osborne and David Cameron have gone the extra mile to bend over backwards for HSBC to ensure that their banking license in the US wasn't removed when they were fined instead of prosecuted in 2012 by the DOJ. George Osborne personally intervened in that case, pleading that taking away HSBC's license would endanger financial stability and cause a global meltdown, clearly kind of overstretched from the then chancellor. So, I mean, all these events kind of point to, you know, HSBC getting a level of political protection over and above what we would even normally expect for a party like the Conservatives, whose principal role, let's be honest, is to protect financial services. I mean, in 2010, 51% of their fundraising came from the City of London. So the Conservative Party are majority owned by the city.
And now Cameron and Osborne have left office. They're earning hundreds of thousands of pounds giving speeches at HSBC. I mean, what does the second biggest bank in the world need to learn from Osborne and Cameron? I mean, what are they paying them hundreds of thousands of pounds? It's payback time.
Let me do a very quick recap. Joel Benjamin is on the programme. Go to communityreinvest.org.uk, journalist, environmentalist and justice campaigner. Joel is all over this story. Nicholas Wilson, Mr. Ethical, standing in Hastings and Rye in the election, the forthcoming election against Amber Rudd. There is evidence, it must be said. And I'm like any other, you know, semi-decent journalist. I'm terrified of libel. But I've looked at everything that, you know, you guys have sent me and that I've been reading over the last couple of weeks. This is slam dunk. There is serious, serious corruption here. Folks, we're talking about loans of millions of pounds to the Conservative Party by a company owned by their former treasurer, a company that wasn't doing very well, that got a massive loan at the height of the financial crisis, a very dubious loan indeed. The guys have been talking there about the favours then that have flowed from that loan, from the Conservative Party through HSBC, lobbying on behalf of the bank by David Cameron, by George Osborne, Stephen Green being made a peer, and more besides. Joel Benjamin and Nicholas Wilson on the line. Let's talk about Theresa May acting possibly on behalf of her husband, because he works for a company that has done and does continue to advise HSBC, including helping it in Hong Kong, helping even HSBC put a bank in Hong Kong. HSBC has been advising Saudi Arabia and helping it sell an oil company. Theresa May is right in the middle of that. It really is filthy. Again, I'm not even going to restrain myself. Talk to us about Saudi Arabia, Theresa May's husband, Capital Group, and the sale of the oil company in Saudi Arabia. Go ahead.
Shortly after Theresa May was elected, it was announced that HSBC and Global Capital, her husband's company, were going into a deal in Hong Kong. I've been told by a financial journalist there's nothing particularly unusual about that. But following that, in January, it was announced that Saudi Arabia National Oil Company called, Aramco?
Aramco, yeah.
Yeah,
Saudi Aramco, yeah.
Yeah, and we're planning to float, I think, 10% of the business on the international stock exchange, and the IPO will be worth between 50 and 100 million pounds, and the HSBC were in the frame for being advisors on the deal. And the advisors on a deal like that, they get 7% of the total share offering. So, you know, huge amount of money. So that was in January. And then in April this year, Theresa May went to Saudi Arabia. I mean, and this was all to do with, you know, business after Brexit and so on. But she went to Saudi Arabia with the head of the London Stock Exchange, whose name I can't remember. But he was the only person that accompanied her in meetings in Saudi Arabia. She had a meeting with the head of Aramco. And I don't know if he was at that meeting, but it was a private meeting. And she came back to the UK. And then shortly afterwards, it was announced that HSBC had got the job.
Amazing. The guy's name is Xavier Rowley. It's Xavier Rowley. That's the guy.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Joel. Go ahead.
Just to bring George Osborne back into this, I mean, you mentioned a deal was struck in Singapore. On the 6th of April, Mr. George Osborne gave a speech at the HSBC Hong Kong office. 5 hours work, for which he invoiced £68,225. Nice work if you can get it. That speech to HSBC was declared on the 27th of April, which just happens to be one day prior to the HSBC AGM, thus ensuring that it would not be public knowledge ahead of the AGM because the expenses were only published by Parliament a week later.
Jesus Christ. You know, when I'm listening to that, Joel, I'm hearing Tony Soprano asking for no-show jobs. For his men, and I'm not trying to be glib, I'm not trying to be funny about it. This is deadly serious.
Well, Richie, I've got to tell you my Sunday Times story, which I'm sure I've said it to you on the show before, but it's all connected with this. Before the last election in 2015, was it? Yeah. The Sunday Times, their Home Affairs correspondent Tom Harper was investigating my story and the Cameron cover-up of the HSBC fraud. And during the time that he was doing the investigation, the editor of the Sunday Times, Camilla Cavendish, had a meeting with Cameron at Chequers. I mean, that might have been routine, who knows, but she did. But the day before the story was due to break in the Sunday Times, it was spiked. He sent me an email just saying the story hasn't got in. No explanation, no nothing, nothing. It just didn't get in. And it was before the election, which would have been in May, I think. Anyway, it was announced 2 months later that Camilla Cavendish had a job at Number 10 with David Cameron as the head of their policy unit. And then when Cameron resigned in his resignation honours, he made a baroness.
Joe, let me ask you.
She had covered up a story that would have destroyed his political career.
And was rewarded for it.
And was rewarded with a job at Number 10 and then a peerage.
Joel, great work, Joel, first of all, mate. I mean, it really is terrific work. How does it sit with you that hearing what you've done and your colleagues, you know, guys like me contact the Labour Party, and, you know, politely ask them, why have they not attempted to, you know, again, to use that open goal analogy. How does that make you feel, Joel? What do you think of that?
Well, look, I think the first point to make here is it's not just the Labour Party who aren't prepared to comment on this stuff.
I mean,
the mainstream media as a whole refuse to engage with issues of financial corruption, particularly anywhere involving UK's too big to fail banks. And, you know, we have effectively a national myth that Britain is not corrupt. When it comes to election time, the media goes into, you know, meltdown. They refuse to report on politically sensitive stories. And that effectively buys complicity in a system we all know to be highly compromised. So when you sort of point the finger at the Labour Party and ask, you know, why aren't you commenting on this stuff? Yeah. I think before you extend that question, you have to ask another question, which is why are institutions like the BBC, which have a public duty to educate and report in the public interest, why is it that institutions like the BBC seem to be kind of bought into this omerta around reporting on financial fraud? So,
well, because Cameron appointed a director of HSBC to head the BBC. That's why.
You know,
the own affair head.
And
it was an unlawful appointment, and there was no proper. The procedures weren't properly followed.
Nicholas was that.
Sorry.
And Sajid Javid was one of the guys who received £4,500. HSBC.
Sajid Javid was the Secretary of State for Department of Media and Sport at the time, and he appointed Rona Fairhead, an HSBC director, to head the BBC. And if you look at my website, I've got a blog called Smoking Gun, and the appointment of Rona Fairhead was extremely irregular. I mean, normally government procurements have to be put to tender and advertised. This wasn't. They claim it was put to tender, but the whole process was completed within 10 days. They apparently invited 8 companies. This was for the recruitment job. They invited 8 companies to tender for the job. 10 days later, a contract was agreed with a company called Saxton Bamfylde, where a partner is the wife of the director general of the BBC. Saxton Bamfylde got the job. The contract was dated, I can't remember the exact date, but it was dated on a Saturday of a bank holiday weekend. This is, I mean, personally, I believe the contract that I've been sent is a fake, because it doesn't comply with various rules about procurement. You're supposed to have a clause in there dealing with the Bribery Act. There's nothing in there about the Bribery Act. I actually think it's a contract that has been concocted to send to me under the Freedom of Information Act. So the whole procedure was incorrect and probably unlawful. If the value of it was higher, if it was more than, I think it was £120,000, it certainly would have been unlawful under EU regulations. But it certainly didn't follow the government rules on procurement. So basically, Cameron appointed, to everybody's surprise, all the media were assuming that it was going to go to Scardano and various other people, but Rona Fairhead was never in the frame. But I believe that this appointment of Rona Fairhead to the BBC followed after Joel and I had uncovered the FCA and HSBC colluding together to cover up this fraud that I'm dealing with. And we exposed that, I think it was on the end of April. And then in June, the whole process started to get Fairhead into the BBC. It's all on my... blog.
It's all on nicholaswilson.com. But Joel, we've been covering stories like this for a number of years. You know, David Cameron was the Prime Minister who appointed Jeremy Hunt as the Culture Secretary, specifically because Hunt was sympathetic to Rupert Murdoch's News Corp owning all of Sky B. I mean, this is filthy. We're talking about the same Chancellor who sold state assets for far less than they were worth when he was warned that those assets would mature in the coming years and would, in fact, be worth far more than they were now. It's the corruption is endemic, and I absolutely take your point. First of all, start with the BBC and the print media in this country and ask, why are they not all over it? You've written for these newspapers. I totally agree with that. But at such a critical time for so many people... Jeremy Corbyn has been talking today about what's going to happen to the worst off in society. People with disabilities going to these disgusting assessment to work tribunals and all of this. The question has to be asked, why is the Labour Party not all over it?
Well, I mean, what I'd say is when Jeremy Corbyn talks about the game being rigged, it's a bit of a passive statement. The obvious question then becomes, rigged by whom and in whose interests? And when we ask those questions, it throws up a whole range of different answers. And I guess if I was to have one criticism of the way in which this Labour Party has dealt with financial corruption or failed to deal with it, as compared to someone like Bernie Sanders in the US, for instance, Bernie Sanders has been very quick to point the finger at Wall Street and say, look, fraud is now the business model on Wall Street. We're going to do something about it and we're going to break up the banks. Now, everybody in this country in the mainstream media talks about Jeremy Corbyn being a Marxist, but I don't know about you, but I haven't heard Jeremy Corbyn talking about breaking up all the too big to fail banks. So he's nowhere near as radical on finance as a Bernie Sanders was in the US, but he's positioned as some sort of kind of, you know, reds under the beds nutcase. And so I think what this again demonstrates is the extent to which financial services dominate every kind of facet of our life in this country, and people aren't allowed to talk about it. There is an omerta, and during elections, you'll find that banking, corruption, tax avoidance, these sorts of issues are just entirely blank from the political discourse.
Let me just add another point, if I may. And I, again, Richie, I apologise if your listeners have heard this before, but it's important. Very go relevant. Ahead. There's a man called Jonathan Evans, who used to be the head of MI5. He was then made Sir Jonathan Evans, and he's a director of HSBC, which is a job he took on after leaving MI5. But he's also a director of a company called Arc Data Centres. Now, Arc Data Centres have a subsidiary company called Crown Hosting, and Crown Hosting provide the data services for every single government department in the UK. So, in theory, Jonathan Evans, he's now Lord. Incidentally, David Cameron made him a Lord at the same time that Rona Fairhead started at the BBC. So I'm assuming that Cameron, you know, MI5 and Jonathan Evans assisted greatly in the appointment of an HSBC director to head the BBC. But in theory, Lord Evans now has access to everybody's personal data in the whole of the UK. I mean, they do the data for MI5, MI6, GCHQ, all government departments, including the security services.
Not a word. Do you know, Nicholas is standing in Hastings and Roy on an anti-corruption platform on June 8th. He's going up against the Home Secretary, Amber Rudd. Nicholas, thanks for that. I'm going to give the last word to Joel this. And you and I will talk. I mean, stay there, Annie. Don't go anywhere yet, Nicholas. But you and you and I will talk the week of the election. Joel, what do you do from here then? I mean, this is one of the biggest stories of corruption in UK electoral history. Where do you go from here with this?
Well, look, I mean, on a personal level, I think, you know, all we can do is, you know, keep banging the drum for, you know, exposing what's happened, exposing the way our political system has been entirely captured by financial interests and sort of, you know, the revolving door, collusive corruption between financial elites and kind of politicians. In terms of, you know, what we can all do, I mean, I've been quite amazed the extent to which the story, despite the fact it's had no mainstream media coverage, barely, has actually permeated. So just yesterday I came across a petition demanding an inquiry into this issue with around 20,000 signatures, nothing to do with me, anyone I'm aware of. You know, this has resonated, and I think it will resonate. It's just up to all of us to keep asking questions, demand answers, and to not give up on it. Because, you know, for me, in an election which has been fought after 30 Conservative MPs were accused of election expenses fraud, it's extraordinary that political corruption is not the number one issue being debated at this election, and it bloody well should be. So it's up to all of us to, when we go to political hustings, any opportunity we get, keep asking about political corruption, what's going to be done about it, what plans political parties have got to clean up our institutions, and stop with this mindless kind of, you know, rhetoric that the UK is not corrupt. I mean, it's extraordinary. Corruption is everywhere you look.
It's endemic. You can find out more about Joel at communityreinvest.org.uk. Go to nicholaswilson.com to find out more about Nicholas and his campaign for Hastings and Roy. Joel, thanks for doing that work, mate. It's massive. You know, it's a tragedy that our broadsheet newspapers are not all over this. I mean, this should bring the election down, let alone the government. This story is so important. I hope to hear from you again, Joel. And Nicholas, once again, mate, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Richie.
Thanks, Richie.
Cheers, guys. Bye. Great work. Thanks a lot. Joel Benjamin there and Nicholas Wilson on The Richie Allen Show for, Tuesday, May 16th, 2017. Plenty of tweets on this, loads of emails as well. Lots to get into. Back in a minute after a very, very quick break. Don't go anywhere. This is your Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2 and alternatecurrentradio.com.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop, desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Virtually every transaction that involves a child is valuable to somebody.
We intend to show everyone the real reason children are being removed at an alarming rate.
No, this is awful.
The baby's not been seen by the dots or nothing.
They are psychopathic.
They have got the legal right to kill children now, because that's what they do.
Traffic 2. Available now at premilittlepictures.co.uk.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
It's an absolute travesty that Joel Benjamin and Nicholas Wilson need to come to this program, because while we've got an audience and we're grateful for it and we've built an audience over nearly 3 years, 2.5 years, we don't have anything like the numbers that tune into BBC radio programming or television programming on a daily basis. We certainly don't have the numbers of people who buy the Daily Mail or read the Daily Mail. It is a travesty that such obvious, disgusting, endemic corruption not be exposed and put in front of the majority of people living in this country. Everything Joel Benjamin and Nicholas Wilson said there has been proven to be 100% true. The dodgy loan, the donations to the party, the political favours in lieu of that, flying to America to prevent investigations and criminal trials for HSBC, operating on behalf of HSBC in Saudi Arabia, the appointment of the chairman of HSBC at that time to the House of Lords, the peerage, the speeches being given by Cameron and Osborne now to HSBC audiences for hundreds of thousands of pounds a time, which I made the silly, you know, I alluded to it kind of being a no-show job. You know, Paulie Walnuts and Chris Maltisanti, let's get them a couple of no-show jobs, you know, at the construction site. That's what it is when Cameron turns up and talks monumental bollocks to a HSBC audience. They're not even listening. Half pissed on champagne and wine. And he gets £200,000-£300,000 in his back pocket for that as he leaves. That is a kickback. That is a thank you for doing what you did for us when you were in office. It's horrendous. And of course the media are as much to blame for their non-exposure of this as the Labour Party. But you've got to be asking some serious questions about the Labour Party and its leadership and why they wouldn't use such... I mean, if all things being equal and this being a normal world, you know, you would be rolling on your back, giggling like a lunatic if you were chairing the Labour Party campaign, election campaign. You'd be rolling around laughing maniacally before you drop the dime, as the Americans say, on the filth of the corruption by the Conservative Party. But not a peep and not a word from that particular party. 3 minutes past the hour on your Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live in association with davidicke.com for Wednesday, May 16th, 2017. My name is Richie Allen. We're also on alternatecurrentradio.com, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester. And we're on TuneIn Radio as well. We love TuneIn Radio. Ah, yeah. Looking forward to the new TV show on Thursday.
Bad, 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 bad boy. You make me feel so good.
minutes past the hour. Some sort of Freudian slip there. Gloria Estefan, Bad Boys on Tuesdays. Getting ahead of myself. Tuesdays, Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live, of course, on davidicke.com. Fab Radio 2 and Alternate Current Radio. Our next guest hasn't been with us in a year. That's extraordinary. No idea why. She's a remarkable woman. Incredible, really. She's got one of those resumes that if I began reading it out, it would get us to the end of the programme. She's a terrific journalist, writer and researcher, and author, of course. Her book, Chemtrails, Harp and the Full Spectrum Dominance of Planet Earth, is an outstanding read, and it's the reason that I was introduced to her a couple of years ago. She's also been a piano teacher, lecturer, and she's done many, many things, written for many publications about MK Ultra and satanic ritual abuse. We love her, and it's about time we had her back on. Ilana Freeland, welcome back.
Thanks, Richie, and thanks for saying I'm such a great piano teacher, which I'm not.
Well, you were anyway, or are a piano teacher,
no,
right?
No, that's someone else. No way. No, I can still play one song from the years of piano I had.
How did that get into your bio?
I don't know, but it was interesting good. I liked it.
Well, thanks for clearing it up. Honesty is always the best policy. Look, it is brilliant to have you on because I had a look at... We're having a look at things, and I saw that you hadn't been on since last summer, and I thought, wow, that's kind of incredible, because a lot of things have been happening since then for you, and I know that you've continued to work. I know that there's a sequel in the pipeline for your book, of course, which we'll talk about as well. The smart grid, the rollout of that. What's been happening recently for you, Ilana? I know you've been doing a lot of radio, and you've been talking a lot about HARP, weather modification, DARPA technology, the Pentagon. Tell us what's been going on.
Right. It's really all around the Space Fence book now, Richie. I finished it in October, and the publisher was to bring it out in September, but has delayed it until January 2018. So I'm now going back through it for a fourth edit to make it even better. It's called Under an Ionized Sky, From Chemtrails to Space Fence Lockdown. And this will be the book that shows what the next step of the ionized atmosphere created by the chemical trails being zapped with radio frequency on a daily level to produce weather systems and for other military agendas, what they have to do with each other. The Space Fence itself is now, they're announcing it. They're announcing it in terms of how it's going to count the space debris above to protect our satellites. But it is really about much more. And it has a very, very vast ground system connected to what is being laid in the near-Earth orbit. And that, you know, for a lot of this, Richie, I have to thank Billy Hayes, the harp man, who directed me in this direction about 2 years ago of the Space Fence, and that I needed to study it. And wow, I'm amazed. In fact, what's new for me is that not only is there this sequel of the Under an Ionized Sky about the Space Fence and what it has to do with the ionized atmosphere, but I see now how it's connected to what we have breathed in and what is in our blood system in our that has jumped beyond the blood-brain barrier and in our brain, and what this has to do with synthetic biology and a transhumanist future.
I'm so glad.
That'll be the third book.
I'm so glad you said that, because when I announced you were coming back on the program today, almost I got an avalanche of emails, and people said, will you ask Ilana to talk about something that when they mention it to their friends, Ilana, their friends think they're cuckoo, you know, they've gone completely crazy. But a lot of our listeners believe is that along with aluminium, barium, strontium and the other heavy metals being sprayed out. There are nanobots. People really believe this. And some very clever people and some very rational people believe that nanobots are being put into the atmosphere to be ingested by people. Do you want to talk about that and speak to those
absolutely.
Questions?
Yeah, and that has to that goes back to the work in the late 90s and early 2000s of Clifford Carnicum, the independent scientist in northern New Mexico at that time, who was a close friend of mine when I was living in New Mexico. And that's how I really got involved in all this, Richie, was through Clifford. We would sit and talk about what he was discovering in the particulates coming down in precipitation, in snow, in rain. He would talk about his HEPA filter collecting fibers, very tiny fibers that he then had to get bigger and bigger microscope power in order to see and analyze. He's the one who first talked about the Morgellons creature, and some people pronounce it Morgellons. I don't think it really matters, that had five parts to it and came down in a fiber, which was sort of an encasement of the other four smaller parts. And he's done a great deal of research on that. I highly recommend that people go to his site, carnicuminstitute.org, in order to see how scientifically, and he's a taskmaster when it comes to scientific method, how on a shoestring budget he was able to do so much to alert us to what we were breathing in. Yeah, I remember the night that he had my blood sample and my spit, and we put the blood sample under a 300 power microscope, and there I saw the Morgellons creature, and it is very much genetically engineered. I saw it sucking the iron out of my red blood cells. And actually, my red blood cells at that time looked better than anyone else in the, at that time, very small sample of 25 or 30 people. So this is real. And that's the moment I realized, okay, this is real. And what we're dealing with is a technology that operates in the invisible, not just in the nano scale and the micron scale, by which you need really sophisticated technologies, expensive technologies in order to see, but we also are dealing with waves and particles, the two forms of energy that are now being locked down, are being controlled, and are moving into more sophisticated warfare, ways of not just controlling space or near Earth orbit, or even on the ground, various nations and typical warfare, but controlling humanity and life itself. This is real. And as far as the nanobots, that's just another fancy name for a genetically engineered entity that is very tiny and impossible to see with the human eye.
This is really huge, this. And we do have a lot of listeners listening on commercial radio here in Manchester. And many of them, they shake their heads when we talk about these subjects, and they leap to the conclusion, and they're entitled to their opinion. I don't deny anybody their right to their opinion, but they reach the conclusion that this is insane. And why would Richie be talking about this, and why would you do this? It isn't insane, because as Alana knows better than I do, this agenda is out in basically in the wide open. Ray Kurzweil, for example, the Google researcher, has been talking about, the director of engineering at Google, has been talking about, you know, the release of smart dust that people will inhale. He's been talking about basically the trans modification, or the transhumanist agenda that Alana writes about and talks about so much in her books, that, you know, in 25 years' time, we'll be uploading our brain, we'll all be part of a cloud. It's all there. It's all right there. And I used to think this was crazy as well. I used to think chemtrails was a nonsense, and there was a time when I wouldn't speak about it. And then I met a wonderful man from Maui called Bruce Douglas. And Bruce has done a remarkable work on soil sample analysis in Maui and was able to show, you know, 10 times, 12 times, 15 times soil samples with 15 times the amount of these heavy metals and these other things that, you know, that should ordinarily be present in soil samples. And I met a woman who had Morgellons. And just on Morgellons, Ilana, when some people react very badly to it, that is understandable. Some people will, I suppose the vast majority of people will not have the very severe reaction to Morgellons where we see the lesions and we see the fibres under the skin visibly. That does happen, of course, but the majority of people that won't happen to, is that right? We just won't be aware of it.
Well, yes, and it's a real question in my mind. I haven't had any outbreaks, but I also have, Clifford and I discovered through his health, I put him on the diet I've followed for over 35, 40 years, a macrobiotic diet, not religiously macrobiotic, but very macrobiotic in the sense of I studied Chinese medicine for 6 years and think in terms of yin yang, which is basically a fancy way of saying acid alkaline when it comes to diet. And what we discovered was, and it was Clifford who discovered it, but I'm the one who sort of alerted him to the possibility that the Morgellons creature is programmed to really love acidity and hate, in a way, alkalinity. It will not reproduce or grow in an alkaline environment. It will tremendously reproduce and grow in an acidic environment. So what I've recommended to people is not necessarily to be macrobiotic, but to get some of that pH paper and check their urine in the morning to see where they're at on the scale of pH, and start studying the foods that produce alkalinity in the process of oxidation in the body and the ones that produce acidity. And it's not always straightforward. So it's a matter of experimentation. And I think that's where we're at, is a lot of people are experimenting with their own bodies, people without outbreaks who believe that this is really going on. And we're looking at baths. I know that Tony, I always say his name wrong, Pedascalero, and he's fantastic. Richie, if you haven't heard him, you should have him on your show. He's got all kinds of ideas, ionizing foot baths, a bath with Epsom salts, borax, and sea salt, all of the things that pull the nanos out of the body. And along with the Morgellons, I call that a nano as well. It's a nanobot. There are other nanobots that have been released into the upper atmosphere and are falling to the earth for us to breathe. But if you're saying, if your viewers, your listeners are thinking, they're doing this to kill us, I don't think that's true. I think some depopulation, this would be perfect for a depopulation move, and that may be in the cards as well. But at this point, I say that we're being used as guinea pigs to just see what happens. And of course, these people can hire hackers who can hack into hospital records, doctor records, clinic records, your own computer, whatever. And they're very interested in seeing how we evolve. This has to do with the transhumanist future. Who is able to evolve to handle this? Who is finding methods for survival? And what are those methods, and are they working? I mean, even Clifford himself in the early days, he had a way of telling the ISPs of the people visiting his site. And they were all Department of Defense agencies and intelligence agencies. They were all coming to his site to see just what he could come up with in reinventing the wheel that they already had all the answers to. And I think this is still going on.
We've got Ilana Freeland on the line, folks. A number of questions coming in about Elon Musk and the global Wi-Fi grid run from space this is massive as well, Alana. Connect the dots to what we were just talking about. 4,000 satellites to be launched to cover the Earth in a Wi-Fi cage, I suppose you could call it. What's going on with that? Why should people be concerned about it?
Well, that is my primary interest now is the space fence operation. And we actually saw this, but didn't know what we were looking at back in the early 80s when under the Reagan-Cheney-Bush regime, we had the Strategic Defense Initiative, the SDI program. We called it Star Wars because the Star Wars movies, the first three had come out from 1977 and on. So this was sort of an announcement of a space age, but then suddenly they pulled it back, and it became known as the Ballistic Defense Missile Program under Clinton, who followed that George H.W. Bush's regime. That followed the Reagan regime. I always think that because George H.W. Bush really ran Reagan's administration with Cheney. It was tabled. And only now that I wrote the Chemtrails Heart book and deconstructed Bernard Eastland's original patent for HARP, did I realize that that what they lacked was this ionized atmosphere that HARP experiments were able and HARP's tremendous power were able to clarify and get going. What they did is they pulled energy from the ionosphere down into our lower atmosphere. And that's why we see the jets flying every day with whatever is classified in their fuel and possibly with supplementary tanks on board. We're seeing the necessity to keep pumping the mini ionosphere that our atmosphere has become. And the reason it has to be done is not to kill us, not to do anything. We're just collateral damage to a military program. What they want is to keep the atmosphere like an antenna, ionized, electrified, battery ready for all of the different operations that they have going now, because we are living in an electromagnetic era of the space age. And so the space fence that is now has been announced, and they're building a new installation on the Kwajalein Atoll out in the Marshall Islands. They have plenty of things in the United States. They have other, there are over 1,500 bases around the world. There are radar stations and many things that serve this space fence operation now that the atmosphere is perfect, primed for these electromagnetic operations. And so the space fence part of it, besides the ground level instruments that I go very deeply into in the space fence book, above the planet, yes, this is important because what's happening is, and Elon Musk definitely plays into this, these sounding rockets and private rockets that are zooming into space, into the near-Earth orbit. These sounding rockets, and that's just a term they use for research. It's got something to do with, they've got sensors on it, they've got microprocessors. They're maybe unleashing trillions of sensors up there while the rocket is going up. They're also spewing, the rocket is spewing behind it, aluminum oxide, nanoparticles, lithium, titanium, strontium, the usual culprits. And the reason that formula of the rocket fuel is so similar to that which is being spewed from jets, commercial and military, is because they want a contiguous connection between what we have in our lower atmosphere and what is in near Earth orbit, so that there's no demarcation between the two. It's just a continuation, and that in itself, which is above the planet, what happens because of centrifugal force of the Earth spinning, is that that spins and spins and spins and eventually settles into a ring around the equator that looks amazingly like a Saturn ring. And that's the key. They want this all to work together. And it's all for what the military calls C4, command, control, communications, and cyber warfare. And within that little simple formula of command and control, you have this idea of space communication. So, for example, what's up there looking at Saturn right now? What's looking at Mars right now? Communication with those vessels that we send into space. They've also been working on the Van Allen belt to get a way through it, so that we can send people up, because heretofore, you'd need to wear a heavy lead-lined spacesuit and line the entire vessel with lead, because that radiation has prevented everything thus far, at least in rockets. I'm not going to go into possible scalar events. So this is about space communication, and more important to us here on Earth, it appears to be a tremendous surveillance instrument whereby everyone, especially, you know, all the people who've breathed in the nanobots that are highly conductive, that can be remotely communicated with, that can be remotely programmed, we are all subject to this metallic lockdown via a space fence global instrument run by AI, artificial intelligence. That's how I see it.
And the rollout then of smart meters. Now, I think where the studio is based, most domiciles, most houses around here have been converted. So the old gas meter and the old electricity meter is gone. For most people, Alana, they've got smart meters now. I don't yet. But if the owner of the property I rent decides to go for it, there isn't very much I can do about it, only move. But I'm lucky enough that right now they're old-fashioned meters. So these things are sold with these great benefits. You know, your bills will be more accurate. Don't worry about inaccurate bills. We get an accurate reading of how much electricity and how much gas you're using. It's all very good. So they're sold with these great benefits. But really, the rollout of smart meters is directly connected to what you've just been talking about there, right?
Absolutely. And the smart meter, the way I look at it, and I just finished re-editing the section in the Space Fence book on smart meters, so it's fresh in my mind. The smart meter, put it with the Internet of Things, the IoT, it's called. And that's your refrigerator now has a computer, your telephone, of course, all the electrical instruments in your home have some sort of microprocessor in them, which is another way of saying a tiny computer. So what the smart meter was designed to do is to collect all of the IoT communiques, yes, energy levels, energy use, but also the possibility of microphones in it, also visuals, cameras, and just to turn the entire home into a mini concentration camp of spying. And then that smart meter collects that data and is, of course, a two-way instrument. It also, and then can communicate it to whatever places in England you have that are collecting data on citizens. And then the other thing is that it's constantly pulsing. So it'll tell you that it's only communicating a couple times a day. But the truth is it's pulsing every 2 to 4 seconds. And that pulsing is tremendously harmful to our Schumann resonance, to our normal human resonance, because we're the kinds of creatures who will, if there's something electromagnetic that has a pulse rate near us, even if we can't see it, our body will take it up. It's just how we're made. We're easily influenced by what's called cyclotronic resonance. And that, of course, is part of HARP's capability and other ionospheric heaters all operating in concert. They are able to produce a cyclotronic resonance that may even change the signature of life on Earth. Ours right now is the Schumann resonance, 7.83 hertz. What if it changes it? Will that change life? Oh, yes. Yes, it will.
This is massive as well. And one of the reasons I was really keen to connect with you again, Alana, apart from the fact that it's been so long since you were on and it was about time that you came back, but some of our listeners will know, some of them won't know. But again, this is to support what Alana is saying, because there are people listening to this program through commercial radio and they're not used to hearing this sort of information. They haven't been exposed to this information before, so they think it is crazy. They think it's crazy conspiracy theory. The Financial Times reporting this week, a story that was reported by the BBC earlier this month, DeepMind, which is the artificial intelligence company owned by Google, was given access to the personal medical records of over 1.5 million British patients by the NHS. Think about that for a minute. Why would artificial intelligence companies be given access to the personal medical records of over 1.5 million British people without their consent? Completely illegal.
Right.
You know, and I eventually get tongue-tied. Because the horrors of that, of the National Health Service compromising the data of its patients and giving it to an artificial intelligence company owned by Google. And yet still people will listen to programs like this and say, oh, this is crazy stuff, this conspiracy theory. Speak about that. Talk to us about that. DeepMind getting access to medical records.
Well, and I'm wondering now that you brought that up, if that has to do with the recent cyber hack that happened, that I remember England being mentioned for its hospital records were completely taken captive, and there was a blackmail situation where the hacker said that, you know, I can give these back, but not until you send me X amount of bitcoins. I'm just wondering if that was a false flag event to justify AI companies like this one you're mentioning to access hospital records. I mean, usually they have to have some sort of cover story as to why they're doing it.
Well, it's fascinating, isn't it? Because the story was actually first broken a year ago by the BBC.
But
it's interesting that the Financial Times has been writing about it this week.
Because of that hack. I'm sure that's why, Richie.
Because
it was
of the
a
hack,
huge
possibly,
hack.
Yeah.
I mean, 750,000 sites down around the world. Huge.
It's interesting. Yeah, you go back to May 2016, a year ago. The BBC reported through the New Scientist publication that Google was given access to over 1.5 million NHS patient records. At the time, there wasn't a lot said about it, other than the data was given of patients from the Royal Free Barnet and Chase Farm hospitals in London, going back over 5 years, to develop an app known as Streams that will alert doctors when someone is at risk of developing kidney injury. That was reported last year, but it's back in the news again this week. I think you're absolutely right because of the hack. How incredible. But to be giving DeepMind, you know, at any time access, an AI company, to the data of millions of people without their consent is absolutely disgraceful. And, you know, we can speculate, and we're entitled to speculate why they would be given access to that data. What are they really developing? You know,
yes.
Crazy stuff, isn't it? It's exactly.
I want to go into. I mean, people hear this and they think it's crazy. But then the other people are thinking, oh my gosh, you know, how fearful they can be. And to me, and maybe I'm just hardened because I research this stuff all the time. But I've had my moments of weeping. I've had my moments of feeling absolutely overwhelmed. But now I see myself as a warrior. And I guess my latest mantra is, not on my watch. I mean, this is my life. I chose to be here in some way to really go through this tremendous transition from one America and world to another, completely different. It's really changed immensely here in my lifetime. But not on my watch to me means, all right, I'm going to find out about this. I'm going to arm myself with knowledge. I believe that knowledge is power. Scientia est potentia. I remind people all the time, especially people who don't like to read and don't like to think too much or too deeply. This is a fantastic opportunity, this time of ours, where, yes, technology, expensive, big tech like CERN in Switzerland is riding high. And we who believe in a democratic way of life are riding low. Yes, this is true. But I imagine people felt similarly in the Middle Ages when they lived with the power of the Catholic Church and the Inquisition. So I think every time has its challenge. And so I, just to meet my challenge on my watch, I really want to understand this. I want to understand it to the degree I can. And when people say, oh, yeah, but you're not a physicist and you don't have a PhD in plasma physics, I don't think there's anywhere in any public university you could go to study what is happening now under secrecy. I don't think there's anywhere you could go. You might pick up a few tips. And you might understand a few scientific concepts better. But this is an era of plasma, the fourth state of matter. This is an electromagnetic era in which we now have petas and tetras, which are the tiny, 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 tiny waves that can shatter our DNA. There are many dangers now, yes, but I tend to think every era has its enemy or has its enemy to freedom and to what being human is really about. And I just feel that I just feel much more powerful now that that I know things and that I'm not subject to the fear that they're promulgating in the headlines all the time. Yeah. Do you understand what I'm saying, Richard?
I get it completely. I get it completely. Of course, the big challenge is to... obviously, to reach as many people as possible with the information, present it to them in a way that they are prepared to listen to it. I wouldn't patronise anybody by saying that we should present it to them in a way that they understand, because that's a patronising thing. I think we should present it in a way that they might just consider it. And there's an abundance of evidence to support this. Entry-level evidence I'm talking about the manipulation of the ionosphere. It's a manipulation of the atmosphere, weather modification of technology. All of that is out there. The smart technology, the smart dust, the transhumanist agenda, which is out in the open. Now, all of that evidence is there for people to just get their teeth into and say, well, look, I can get this much. And then move on to the bigger whys and the bigger purposes and reasons for it, which, as you said, Alana, is multifaceted anyway. There are so many reasons for this agenda. You know, I happened to have on the programme last week a researcher from Germany who was one of the first developers of artificial intelligence technology. And he's still hugely involved in developing AI technology. And, you know, I said, let's get him on the programme. His name is Jürgen Schmidhuber. And, you know, he's a scientist who believes and genuinely believes in in this being of great benefit to humanity. Yeah. And I said, look, we've got to engage with these people because they're not the spawn of the devil. These researchers, these men and women, they're not. So he came on the programme and we had a really good back and forth about, you know, the agenda behind it. And of course, he doesn't get that and he doesn't believe it. But I thought to myself, we've got to engage with these people. We've got to do that because compartmentalization means that many of the men and women working on this technology, they're not aware of the end game, Alana.
No, no, because it's compartmentalized. You're right.
Yeah, they haven't a clue, do they? Well, I won't say that they don't have a clue. These are very clever men and women who are there at the birth of this technology, and they get very excited about helping children with no limbs walk again, somebody who's blind to implant something to help them see again, and they're caught up in the development of these technologies for the benefit of humanity, but they don't understand where it ultimately goes.
Oh, don't mind that. That's my phone. I don't know.
That's your answer machine.
Is
that all right? Okay. But we have to, I think we have to understand better that not everybody working in these companies is a shill or is evil or is hell-bent on transhumanism. These are people who go to work every day and believe that ultimately they're doing some good.
What? Yeah, for AI, may I recommend someone for you to bring on your show?
Go ahead.
Her name is DJ Walsh, and she was the person who taught us in America about some of the military exercises going on under AI. She is a former systems analyst, so she knows her stuff. I highly recommend her. She would be a good balance to Mr. Schmidt.
Absolutely. Yeah, we'll certainly look her up. Yeah, I mean, we put all the points to Mr. Schmidhuber. You know, we put all the things that we're concerned about to him. You know, I mean, ultimately, I'm of the view, Alana, that a lot of this technology is to move us yet another step beyond understanding who we really are anyway. You know, this virtual reality technology. I mean, you can't go out now without seeing children with these virtual reality goggles connected to their smartphones. And, of course, this is how they're selling it to children. And, you know, we feel very strongly that we're already one step removed already from understanding who it is we really are. You know, infinite awareness. And this technology moves us another step back. I don't know what you think of that.
Well, and it's about free will, right? I'm a student of Rudolf Steiner, have been for decades, and I believe that the human being is a work in progress, is actually a very high hierarchy, comes from a high hierarchy of free will, which is very unique in any spiritual persuasion or spiritual edifice, like in the ancient Vedas or, you know, the ancient Hindu documents thousands of years ago. Free will is something that is very Western. And to me, it's extremely precious. And to me, that's what I see coming is a trying to, through electromagnetics, undermine the human being's birthright to decide and to choose, even to choose wrongly. I think that they use the term hive mind, and the hive mind, of course, makes us think of ants and bees, and I understand that way of seeing that if you could just do a sort of 1984 hive mind, if you could pulse it on frequencies, stack some frequencies on pulses and pump them into, say, an urban center, you could produce great violence. You could produce you could also produce equanimity. You could produce a sort of laissez-faire, who cares attitude. This is all known. These signatures, these emotional signatures and clusters in us are known. And it makes us feel, when you first hear about this, makes us feel like, wow, what kind of free choice can I have if an electromagnetic instrument can make me do whatever it wants? And this is, of course, a problem. Yes. How does that fit in with our free will? Certainly those instruments should not be allowed as people are floundering around trying to find out how to be a true human being. This is the great question to me. We're vulnerable. We're very frail, especially now when we're so distracted by, oh, cool, a new movie, and oh, a new iPhone. The 5G phone is coming out soon that can shatter our DNA and the DNA into future generations. We have no knowledge of electromagnetics. No one's teaching us about it. No one wants us to know about how it works.
No studies. You're right. You're absolutely right.
So what are we going to do? Are we just going to lay down like fish and die? Well, I don't think so. I don't think so. I think we have tremendous capabilities to learn from each other, and that we owe it to the future generations. This is our watch. We owe it to the future generations who are coming. And I certainly do not want AI running this world. Absolutely not. I hope, Richie, when my Space Fence book comes out, you read the chapter I have on CERN. It's entitled, it'll give you a clue, The Temple of CERN. And I see that the occultists involved in the global elite, in the scientific world, in various possibly higher echelons of government agencies, which aren't what they seem, all of these people who have more in mind than profit and career. They want to experiment on the human being. They want to see if the human being can be run by an AI, if an AI can evolve far beyond the human intelligence. It's all a matter of wanting to see if they can do it. And it's always been this way. Very little foresight, very little testing. We've got lots of these guinea pigs called human beings and societies, so we can just practice on them and see what happens. This is the real shallow mindset of Western science. And I always remember what in ancient times, I can't remember who said it, but regarding alchemy, that Rudolf Steiner certainly said that regarding alchemy, that you need to take two steps forward in moral development before taking one step forward in science. Absolutely. And that is certainly not being done now.
It certainly is not. And just to endorse what you said there about free will, Barry Troer, who's been on this program several times as well, has done a lot of work on the use of the technology to control the minds, as you have in your own research and writing, to control the minds of targeted individuals, something we'll return to on this program again in the very near future. We're just about out of time, sadly. The time has absolutely flown by. I look forward to the new book, Alana. I just want to plug again, Chemtrails, Harp and the Full Spectrum Dominance of Planet Earth is an outstanding and a very important book written by Alana Freeland. You can, of course, find Alana on Facebook. There are no other Alana Freelands. She is the only one on Facebook.
So far, yeah.
You can find her on there. Vitally important work and vitally important information. This is been great catching up with you again, Alana. We won't leave it as long before we do it again. And
thanks so much
for your time.
Thanks so much.
Look after yourself. Bye for now. The terrific Alana Freeland on the line to us there at exactly 9 minutes to the top of the hour. Going to take a very quick break. Back in a minute with some more. By the way, I can't get into my Twitter account for some reason. And I know there will be a lot of tweets there. I'm locked out of my Twitter account. I have the password written down somewhere, but I'm not. I think Twitter has done it because we've not logged out of the account for a long time, and it's a security thing. Twitter asking me to re-log in, but I can't remember the password, and I've tried several, so I don't know what to do. So I can't log in and see what people are saying to me, but I know there will have been a lot of tweets on that. So I've not been ignoring your tweets, I just can't get into the Twitter account.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Virtually every transaction that involves a child is valuable to somebody.
We intend to show everyone the real reason children are being removed at an alarming rate.
No, this is awful.
The baby's not been seen by the doctor or nothing.
They are psychopathic.
They have got the legal right to kill children now, because that's what they do.
Traffic 2. Available now at premillanpictures.co.uk.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Broadcasting the information the mainstream media won't touch. This is the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com.
Welcome back. Looking forward to the launch of the TV show on Thursday. You'll be able to watch the TV show on DavidIke.com, on LiveLeak.com, and of course on Facebook as well. I think they'll be streaming it live on Facebook. That's 9 p.m. this coming Thursday. The brand new Richie Allen television show. And the format of the TV show is, it's just under an hour long because of changeover. It's part of a live Thursday night schedule on beyondvision.tv. Do check out beyondvision.tv. So because of the changeover, it'll need to be just under an hour, about 50 minutes or thereabouts it'll be. And the format is, we'll have a look at the big stories in the mainstream media, and we will interview a guest. We will have a live guest every Thursday, and the show will be interactive. So we'll be looking at your tweets, we'll be showing your tweets and your emails as well on screen, and talking about the content of those tweets and those emails. So that's every Thursday, the Richie Allen television show, brought to you in association with DavidIke.com. Some Thursdays we'll be looking at political issues. Other Thursdays we'll have guests on talking about more esoteric matters or matters of the nature of reality. So it'll vary from Thursday to Thursday. So live radio, Sunday through till Wednesday. Sunday, 11 a.m. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, 7 p.m. The live TV show on Thursday at 9 p.m. And we're back on Friday at 1 p.m. with a roundup of the week's biggest stories in the independent media. So it's a busy old time for the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com. And I appreciate your support of it, so thanks for doing that. If you are of a mind to support this programme, go to Richie Allen. Go to paypal.me/RichieAllen. But also go to richieallen.co.uk, because all the donation details are on there. Do make a contribution to the programme if you can. So that's it for Tuesday's programme then. We'll do it all again tomorrow at 7 p.m. BST. That's tomorrow, Wednesday at 7. The programme is put together. It is edited. It is produced and introduced by me, Richie Allen. Special thanks to Simon Stewart for looking after the YouTube channel, and to Aaron Calland for continuing to develop richieallen.co.uk. Huge thanks to Aaron for that, and to Simon as well, as I said there. Until tomorrow, look after yourselves and one another. Going to leave you with some Duran Duran. Thank you to Alana Freeland. Huge thanks to Joel Benjamin and Nicholas Wilson in the first hour. Until tomorrow, bye for now.